Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 63 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. This month we have an interview with US author Melissa Lennard, and you're not going to want to miss it. It's really fantastic and it's coming up shortly. But first, let's get on with what's hot in the UK and US Amazon lesfic charts, as well as finding out what's going on in the world of lesfic and what's going on in the world of me. First up, the Amazon charts. And I have to say, there's a very literary bent going on in the Amazon lesbian fiction charts at the moment, which is, you know, no bad thing. Let's shake it up. It's not all about romance lesbian fiction, is it? Although it is from me, but you know what I mean. Anyway, topping the lesbian fiction charts in the UK and the US, as I record this on August the 25th, is Emma Donoghue with her book, The Pull of the Stars. Now, Donoghue started this one before COVID-19 became the word on everyone's lips, but it is actually based in Dublin in 1918 around the outbreak of the last worldwide pandemic, the Spanish flu, which killed over 50 million people. So that's kind of some timing on her part, considering she started writing it 2 years ago. Anyway, Donoghue is a lesbian who's written some really fine books, including Room, Stir Fry and Hood. I think Stir Fry was the first one I ever read, and it was a long time ago, maybe 20 years ago. I've no idea if this one, The Pull of the Stars, has a lesbian character in it. I'm assuming it might, but it's the story of three women, a nurse, a doctor and a volunteer, who all work on a maternity ward with quarantined expecting mothers in 1918 in Dublin. It sounds gripping and also not for the squeamish, because apparently there are graphic tales of childbirth. So as much as I do want to read it, I might have to put my fingers over my eyes at that bit, or just fast forward. Fast forward, turn the page. That's what it's called when you're reading a book, isn't it? Fast forward, what am I doing? This week's charts, as I said, are heavy on the traditionally published books, with Bernardine Evaristo's Girl, Woman, Other also coming back into play in the US. Now, this one won the Booker Prize this year, so if literary fiction is your bag, give it a whirl. I still haven't read it, but it is on my TBR pile after I've got through my mountain of romance. But it is a must read, and it's about modern Britain, womanhood and the lives of black families. In the UK, three more mainstream publishers are also in the charts, in the top five, all with lesbian characters at the helm. Claire Chambers' Small Pleasures is a historical novel set in the 1950s. Now, I bought this one to read, but I haven't got round to it yet. Yes, my ever-expanding TBR pile. It's about a young reporter, Jean Swinney, who's sent to report on a virgin birth, and the assignment and the family she finds there changes her life. So I'm hoping she falls in love with the virgin birth mother, whose daughter I think is about sort of 9 or 10. So it sounds intriguing, and it's doing really well, and it's been number one in the UK for about the last bazillion years. Also doing well is Samantha Shannon's The Priory of the Orange Tree, which again is a perennial favourite that keeps boomeranging back into the top five in the UK. This one is described as an enthralling epic fantasy about a world on the brink of war with dragons and the women who must lead the fight to save it. Now, if some of these women fighting dragons are not lesbians, what has she been thinking? You know, if anyone can slay dragons, it's lesbians, right? I'm thinking swashbuckling, leather-clad, Xena style. I don't know if Xena ever had any lesbians, because I've never watched it, but and ever had any lesbians? No. Ever had any dragons? But yes, this one's been described by someone who reviewed it as the new Game of Thrones. So if that is your bag, it's not mine, but it's got about 10,000 reviews, so it's a lot of people's bags. Also doing well in the lesbian charts is Sophie Ward's new book, Love and Other Thought Experiments, which has also been longlisted for this year's Booker Prize. Look at the lesbians sweeping up the Booker Prizes. We're very literary this month, aren't we? This one is about a lesbian couple, Rachel and Eliza, and they're happy and in love until Rachel wakes up one day and tells Eliza an ant has crawled into her eye and is stuck there. And Eliza, being a scientist, doesn't believe her. They have a massive row, and their relationship is called into question. A unique premise, if ever I heard one. Then Ward embarks on a series of interlinked stories mixed with philosophy in a book that's been described as science fiction or perhaps magical realism. Whatever, it sounds bloody bonkers and I want to read it. And I also want to read it because I've long been an admirer of Sophie Ward. I've seen her speak, I've read her journalism, and I've seen her acting, and all are stellar. So I've no doubt that this book will follow along in that realm. So as I say, there's not a lot of pure romance in the Lesfic charts this week, but there are some. So if that's what you're after, in the UK, Sam Skyborn has come to the rescue with her second chance romance, Seal With A Kiss. This one is based on Greek Island, and it's about Jack and Dorothy who get a second chance at love, but will they have the guts to take it? This one has a Greek sunset on the cover and some naked skin with a flower in some woman's navel. So, you know, what's not to love there? Hot Greek sunshine. I mean, we can only dream of hot Greek sunshine, can't we? In this world where no one's travelling anywhere. In the US, Cara Malone's Foxy Lady, a forever veterinary romance, wins this month's Puntastic Title Award. It's book two in the Forever series. You see what she did there? And it's got a caring looking lady on the front with a fox, and she's the Foxy Lady. Oh my god, Cara, you've outdone yourself with puns. The Foxy Lady is called Sydney Young, and she's a wildlife rehabilitator with a pet fox. Of course she is. And her neighbour is called Adelaide, so there's definitely Aussie-Australian theme going on here, Sydney and Adelaide. And Adelaide has a young son called Liam. Sydney and Adelaide, they're sort of circling each other until one day said young boy Liam springs Sydney's fox from its backyard cage, and then a wild fox chase ensues. Honestly, I've no idea what's going on with this plot, but again, kudos for originality and for a lesbian romance with foxes. Maybe it's the thing that we all need and we didn't even know we needed, right? Finally this week, if you liked Hayley Cass's Those Who Wait, and it seems like everyone in the world frankly did love this debut as it's still in the top 10 after forever in the charts, Hayley has written a short follow-up called Forever in a Day, and it's about the same characters, and readers are frankly going crackers for it. So if you read that one, read the follow-up. They're all on Kindle Unlimited. So if you've got one of those subscriptions, it'll cost you out. What a world we live in. That's the chart roundup for August 2020. Happy August, happy summer, happy end of summer if you're in the Northern Hemisphere. That's right. Yeah, we're in the Northern. If you're in the Southern Hemisphere, happy end of autumn? No, winter? Winter. My wife has just shouted winter. So as I sit here, another storm has hit the UK for what is a UK summer without a few storms. But we have had a couple of weeks of 100 plus temperatures, so it's a bit bonkers. And again, climate change is real, everyone. I hope you're making the most of whatever weather you have. Probably you're doing a lot of indoor things because the whole pandemic is still all around us and trooping on. The world is seemingly still on fire, literally and metaphorically, so there's never been a better time to actually just sit down and read or listen to a book, or indeed write one, if that's what you've always wanted to do. What have I been up to? Well, I've been writing some books. I've carried on working all the way through the summer. One Golden Summer, my latest co-written book with T.B. Markinson, is still doing well, so thank you if you bought and reviewed that one. Last week, I also wrote The End on the London Romance Book 7, which is called Hot London Nights. And this one goes to the editor in October and will be with you early next year, late January, if everything goes according to plan. It's the story of India Contelli from Book 6, and it's got family angst, drama, pride, gay biscuits, and a whole lot of London rooftop action going on. So I hope that whets your appetite for it. I've just finished draft 3, so I'm putting it down now. And this week I'm turning my attention back to my Christmas book, which is half written. So I've got 2 months to knock that one into shape. No problem, right? Absolutely not. Let's hope so. My aim this week is to get a wriggle on that one. No rest for me. I actually did have all my books planned to write and get done by mid-October, because our plan was to go away to Mexico for 2 weeks in October. it sounded like a great plan in January, but I don't think it's going to happen now. So we might have to think about where else we might want to go, or, you know, just to have a staycation somewhere nearer to home. In audiobook news, Before You Say I Do is being recorded in September, and that is scheduled to have a mid-October release. So watch this space for that one. I should have more news in the next Lesbian Book Club. Also, One Golden Summer, TB Margeson and I have commissioned that one, and the recording is going ahead next week. So I could have two releases out before Christmas, so let's see where we land, fingers crossed. Yeah, in life news, all my holidays this year are probably going to be cancelled, so I'm hoping to get away to Whitstable, my favourite writing spot, in September, but I'm kind of umming and ahhing still because of all the local lockdowns which are happening in the UK. However, we've used our garden so much this summer, which I'm being very grateful for, and I have been getting out a little, including going to restaurants, the couple of bars and even the gym, but I'm not expecting to travel very far for at least a year or so. In the world of lesfic, all the usual lesbian fiction conferences went online this year, including the Lambda Literary, GCLS, and the New Kid on the Block, the South Coast Lesfic Hangout. Now, I didn't get a chance to take part or watch any of the panels, as I was busy when they were all on, but I hope to once my Christmas book is in the bag. There was some fantastic panels and talks, which I really do want to catch up on, especially from the South Coast Lesfic Hangout. So well done to everybody who put those together, because it was a bit of a pivot and short time space to do it, so well done indeed. GCLS, the online conference, also had the Goldie Awards, which were given out as normal this year, just announced online, and then the awards were sent in the post. So all the winners, if you're curious, can be found at www.goldencrown.org. And a slew of previous podcast guests picked up gongs, including Karen Coolmaker, Jay, EJ Noise, and Carrie Hunter. And the rest of the award winners had some favourite names, including Jerry Hill, Melissa Braden, and Anne McMahon. Okay, that's all from me. Now let's get on with the star of the show, Melissa Lennart. I hope you enjoy the interview. Joining me today is US author Melissa Lennart. A lifelong Texan, Melissa writes women's fiction, mystery, and historical fiction. The New York Times called her sixth novel Heresy, an all-out, women-driven, queer, transgender, multiracial takeover of the Old West, which sounds amazing. The Secret of You and Me, Melissa's first FF romance, is out this month. When Melissa isn't writing, she's thinking, I really should be writing. She lives in Dallas area with her husband, two sons, and golden retriever, so welcome, Melissa.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Oh, it's really fantastic to have you here. So I always say to everyone who comes on this podcast, paint the scene of where you are. Tell listeners what you can see from where you're sitting.
Okay, so I'm actually visiting my mom in my hometown in East Texas. And I am sitting in her office. I'm staring at a blank wall. So it's not really very, very interesting. Yes, so it's pretty early here, and my mom is still asleep with her dog, and I'm just kind of holed up here in the office talking to you. It's not a very exciting picture.
I'm sure it could be.
It's too early to be excited right now.
Yeah. I should say to everyone that Melissa has very kindly got up at 7 a.m. to talk to me today, and to talk to you. So thank you so much for that. So tell us a little bit about your writing journey, Melissa, and how you got started.
So I never in a million years would have ever thought of myself that I would be a writer eventually. It just wasn't in my mind. But at all. And I became a stay-at-home mom, and, you know, I kind of got bored, and I needed some sort of escape. I needed an outlet, and writing kind of became the outlet. I started writing fan fiction, and which I think is a great way to start writing, actually, because a lot of the work has been done for you, and you just have to really kind of plot new things and make certain changes and everything to characters. But mostly, you've got a whole blueprint for you, and so you just have to worry about the story. But, you know, writing fan fiction is great, but after a while, it just wasn't enough. I started having my own ideas, and I wanted to write my own stuff. And so I really started doing that in earnest about 2007. I guess I started my first word to page was probably 2003. So about 2007, I switched to writing my own stuff, and boy, what a disaster that was. I was learning as I go. You know, I didn't really do any formal training. Yeah. I took one class at a community college about writing, and I would read books and, you know, stuff like that. But really, it was me and my mentor, who is my cousin, and he was, we would meet a couple of days a week. We would write, and I would talk to him about stuff, and he really is responsible for my development probably for about the first 5 years of writing. And I didn't really feel like I was making much progress because I was a little bit like that dog on Up I would be working on a project, right? Working on a story. Mm-hmm. And then I would get another idea and I'd be like, squirrel.
Yeah.
And I would move to that other idea and abandon the other one. So I have a lot of abandoned, started and stopped documents on my computer. But about 2012, I decided, you know, I should go to a writing conference. I've never been to one. And so I found one in Dallas, the DFW Writers Conference, and I went, and it was amazing. I mean, they had all these classes, and I was able to learn. And I did my first pitch to an agent, which was a disaster because I was pitching Sawbone. I actually ended up, because I was so ignorant and I didn't do good research, I ended up pitching to someone who just did nonfiction, so that was nice. that was kind of the beginning of, I'd never considered when I was doing all this writing, getting published, getting an agent wasn't in my mind. This was just kind of, well, I guess I should take this next step, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I got the idea that, well, maybe I can get an agent. And the next year at the next conference, I wasn't ready at that first conference. At the next conference, I actually met my current agent. And she started submitting. I met her and I got her based on a mystery because I was like, you know what? I'm not going to be able to sell a Western to an agent because Westerns are like the, you know, redheaded stepchild of publishing. I think they have like 2% or 1% of the market. I mean, nobody buys Westerns. And so I switched over to my contemporary mystery, which is set in a small town based on my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
And I got an agent that said, okay, will you be willing to represent me in multiple genres? Because I don't want to write in just one genre. And she said, of course. And so, yeah, the rest is history, I guess.
Yeah.
7 books later.
Yeah. So you're still with the same agent. That's really impressive as well.
Yeah, I am. You know, she's amazing. She had just started her own agency. So she started really small. And when I started with her, I'm not sure how many clients she had. But, you know, we really grown together. You know, her as an agent, me as a writer, us as partners, mm-hmm. and all of it. And, yeah, she gets me. She gets my writing as in a way that, you know, only a few people really do. And so she's just the best advocate possible for me. And I can't imagine switching to anybody else.
Sounds like a great team.
It really is. Yeah, I love her a lot. Her name's Alice Spielberg. Everybody should submit to her.
Everybody go off and submit to Alice Spielberg. I just wanted to come back on your fan fiction there. What were you writing fan fiction for?
Oh, gosh, Claire. Harry Potter.
Okay.
A long time ago.
It is a great place to cut your teeth, and there's a lot of lesbian romance writers started out in fan fiction for Xena, and I think that's kind of where a lot of lesbian romance started out as. And also, one other thing we can take from that, you know, the story of your beginnings is you had a lot of knockbacks, but just keep going. And that's true for life, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think one of the things, too, as I hope people learn from it, is it's not an overnight thing being published, and you have to really work hard. And I mean, if I tried to get published in like 2007 or 8, it would have never happened because I wasn't ready. My craft wasn't ready. And so I think that, you know, people were like, gosh, you had it really easy. You found an agent, you know, so easily. And it's like, because I waited until my writing was really ready to be submitted. And I think that makes a lot of difference. Mm-hmm. People need to have a little more patience.
So let's turn our attention to The Secret of You and Me, your new book, which I read for this podcast. And I've got to say, it's probably my book of the year so far. It's a second chance romance set in Texas between Nora and Sophie. And they're brought back together when Nora heads home for her dad's funeral, having had a brief affair in their teens. Now, I would say it's an emotional landslide of a novel. So talk to me about the inspiration for writing your first queer romance.
So I've been trying to write a modern day version of Persuasion for about 10 years. And the first attempt at a modern day Persuasion ended up being a murder mystery with a man as the main character, which, you know, Stillwater, which I don't know how that happened. But, well, I think what actually happened is I realized when I started that, it's like, I'm not nearly good enough to try to emulate Jane Austen. What am I doing? So, and then I decided after I'd finished writing and delivered my historical fiction trilogy, the Sawbones trilogy, I wanted to write something completely different, right? And so I decided I wanted to write a women's fiction novel because, you know, it's a genre that I like. Like I said earlier, I never wanted to write in just one genre and be pigeonholed, and writing the same book over and over doesn't sound appealing to me. So I said, okay, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try to rewrite Persuasion. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, okay, who should this couple be? And I knew I wanted to put it in Texas. And so I was kind of, you know, I was kind of going through, and I didn't really just want to write a man and a woman. And I thought about doing, you know, a person of color as one of the, as one of the characters, but, you know, that didn't really feel right either. I wasn't comfortable writing in that point of view because it's not my lived experience. And I had the idea to write romance is two women. And this was in 2016, and there was a lot of, that's right when Own Voices and stuff started up. So I was like, but should I write this? You know, I don't identify in the community. And so I talked to a writer friend of mine who does, and I said, hey, this is my idea. What do you think? Should I even write this? And she encouraged me to write it. She was familiar with my writing, and she said, you know, I know you'll do it justice, and, you know, I'm here for you to help you. And I said, okay. So I started writing it. I just loved it. I just fell in love with the characters. I fell in love with their love story. And I did lean on Kat and other friends to, you know, help me with the community issues and stuff that I wasn't necessarily familiar with. And, you know, I just went into it knowing that it was something I didn't know all about, and I was going to need help. And I mean, really in a humble way, because I wanted to make sure that I respected the story. And I got sensitivity reads from multiple people that identify in the community, and somebody who is involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, a bisexual woman. And so I just feel like I was really happy. I feel like I did the work to make sure that I was honoring those experiences. So that's kind of how it happened.
Yeah, definitely. And I do think you really, it does shine through. I thought it was an absolutely brilliant book, and you really did hit the nail on the head with so many different issues. Homophobia in a small town, homophobia as it's wider society as well, and also alcoholism as well, as you said. And I loved the realism of the characters, particularly Sophie. She's a brilliant heroine in that you're rooting for her, but she just makes ill thought out decisions, you know, and it's all rooted in, yes, she does, and it's all rooted in something, isn't it? And as we know in fiction, bad decisions make great stories, right?
Right, yeah. So Sophie is an interesting character. When I first started this book, I was still wanting to write a version of Persuasion, but I was reading a lot of books like inspired by that, by Jane Austen and stuff, and I never liked the ones that went along plot point per plot point. Those never appealed to me. I like the ones that were kind of taking the general theme, which I didn't even, I've read romance, and I've been in, gone through romance phase and stuff, but I wasn't familiar with the tropes and the second chance romance and the names for everything, which I'm all familiar with that now, but because I've been reading a lot of romance the last few years. So one of the things I did want to keep with Persuasion was the one point of view. I wanted it to be from the Anne character's point of view, which is Nora. So I was writing it, and I got to about the scene where they're meeting at the cafe, and I'm just like, it kind of slowed down, and I was like, you know, what is going on with this? And it just hit me, and I realized, I was like, I need to be in Sophie's point of view. And I started writing Sophie's point of view, and man, it just poured out of me. And she actually became, I love Nora, but she actually became my favorite character because she's just got so much more going on. She's got so many more issues. And so I think the stakes are so much higher for Sophie than they are for Nora. I just loved writing her. And she ended up, you know, being the character that I was rooting for the most.
I think so. I totally agree. You know, she's an alcoholic. She's deeply closeted, and she just breaks your heart, doesn't she? So you really are rooting for her. Obviously, as well, in the end, so Sophie comes out as a lesbian, but you've got Nora, who states that she is bisexual. Now, I've featured a fair few bisexual women in my books. When I say lesbian romance, I'm including LBT. Right. But it's always important to me to show the B in the LGBT is shown on the page. Was that important for you too?
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, otherwise it's just a label with no meaning if you don't show that they had that connection too with a man. And, you know, she did have that connection with the man in the military, and that his death was a major life event for her. I think, though, that probably she is bisexual, but she's probably more lesbian than bisexual, I would think, because he's really the only one that she's felt that way for.
And I did love the realism, as I said, of the characters, and particularly when Sophie's sponsor in AA tells her, don't get involved with Nora because, you know, it's not on her timeline for her recovery. And she's like, yeah, sure. And then goes and does it anyway. You know, I like
bad decisions all the way around.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, as we know, this is what happens in real life. And one of the other characters I also loved was Nora's on-off partner who comes into the picture to fight for her. One of my very favourite scenes of the book was the party where which Sophie and her husband throw, and everyone turns up. And as soon as everyone starts turning up to this party, you're like sitting there reading it, cringing. It was like a car crash, and it was beautifully done. So for me, it was one of my favourite scenes to read. But was it good to write, or was it a bit of a nightmare logistically?
Every one of my books, actually, it's a joke between me and my agent, has a dinner scene. There's this big scene that is a pivotal scene in the story that really moves it in a different direction. And so I had written my... The first one I did was in Stillwater, and it was just a bookstore opening. So it wasn't too terribly complicated. But in The Fisher King, the next book in that mystery series, I decided to write this bonfire by the lake, and it had about 10 characters in it. And my agent was like, Melissa, really? And I'm like, just write it. You know, it's going to happen. But it was a nightmare to write because trying to keep everybody straight and mm-hmm. you know, give everybody something to do, but make sure everybody knew who everybody was. And just so... But I did it. I did it in every one of my the Sawbones books. I did one in every one of those, and I did it in Heresy. So it's kind of my thing. So writing, by the time I was writing that one in Secret, it was like second nature to me, pretty much. But I love those scenes, and you're right. That was a fun scene to write. It was definitely a car crash. But no, I've kind of gotten kind of good at those. I don't have one in my current book. I have a book club in my current book, but there's only 6 characters, so it's not that hard.
Okay, all right. Well, no, I think having read one of them, you need to put another one in, definitely. And while there is a happy ending for Nora and Sophie in The Secret of You and Me, no spoilers, it is a romance. There isn't a happy ending in some ways with the family, and I quite like that because, again, it's realistic and real life isn't neatly wrapped up in a bow. So was that always your intention, or were you tempted to have it all rainbows and hearts everywhere?
No, I wasn't, because people like Brenda, they don't change their minds. They don't come around. And, you know, there's so many people like that. And there's so many rifts in families. You know, people come out. And I wanted to show that. Yeah, I've known quite a few people like Brenda. And I really also, when Brenda tells Sophie what she did at the end, right, which I'm not going to say what she did, but when she tells Sophie, it's not something Sophie's going to forgive her for. It was just, it ruined Sophie's life in a lot of ways, and mm-hmm. so she's not gonna ever get past that. And I thought that was pretty realistic too. So I didn't ever really think of just giving everybody hearts and flowers and stuff, because life is messy, and you know, they'll still have issues going forward.
Yeah, I think everybody who's LGBT, and a lot of other people as well, have met a Brenda. Well, small town mentality and prejudice in their lives. With this book, it's the first LGBT romance published by Mills and Boon. And Mills and Boon in the UK, I don't know about the US, is a very well known historically as a shirts off on the front cover romance brand. I don't know how it's viewed in the US. Not your cover, because your cover is pretty awesome. But as I said, this is the first LGBT romance, queer romance, lesbian romance, FF romance, anything published in the UK and the US, I think. So it's quite a lot of pressure, isn't it?
Claire, I had no idea about that until you told me that. And so I've been like, what? And I texted my agent. I'm like, did you know about this? And she's like, no. So I had no idea. And yes, oh my gosh, there's so much pressure. And I mean, I am thrilled that I am the first. Amazing, but I am a little disappointed that the first isn't someone who's been working and writing lesbian romances for years and years. I've been reading a lot of romances, and they're mostly lesbian romances, and there's so many talented women writing in it, deserve a bigger audience. Now, I think that the small publishers that are publishing LGBT lesbian fiction are doing a great job. I mean, there's so many, like I said, so many good books that I've read and writers that I love and follow and stuff now. But I do wish that it would have been someone in the community. But hopefully, in crossing fingers, this will be a successful book, and they'll start looking more into the community to publish someone next. And as far as, is it the first FF romance in the US. So Mills and Boone isn't a publisher in the US. It's under Harlequin. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure. My publisher is a trade. It's part of Harlequin, but it's also a trade paperback publisher. So they do publish mostly women's fiction. And when I first submitted this book, it was more women's fiction and less romance-y. I leveled up the romantic parts during edits. Yeah, I'm not really sure. I know, I'm pretty sure it's the first FF romance women's fiction that this particular imprint's done, but it's a pretty new imprint. But as far as Harlequin's other imprints, you know, primary romance imprints, I'm not really sure. I would be shocked if it was, but it may be so.
I don't know. I mean, it definitely is for the UK. I'm not sure about the US. It is kind of shocking that it's taken until 2020 to get one on the books with Mills and Boone. But it's a very good line in the sand, and hopefully there will be more following this one across the board, across the LGBT spectrum. So get on it, Mills and Boone.
That's right.
And you also say that you're going to be donating a portion of your royalties to the It Gets Better project, which I think is terrific of you. Why did you decide to do that?
So the It Gets Better project, yeah, I really wanted to donate royalties to charity for a while. And I just felt like with this book and some of the issues that it deals with and, you know, the marginalized community and stuff, and that, you know, I grew up knowing people who were in the closet in this small town and stuff, and, you know, came out later, and some had issues like alcoholism, and others didn't so much. But, you know, the homophobia and the prejudice and stuff was all still there. And the It Gets Better project is trying to help LGBTQ youth worldwide know that, you know, they're not alone, it does get better. And I just liked their mission, and I thought it really dovetailed really well with this book and their story. And so that's why I decided to donate to them.
Yeah, brilliant.
And also hopefully, you know, the book is popular, it gets more people who are aware of the project and more donations and stuff for them. That was also one of my goals.
So let's talk about your other books you've written, which is included Heresy, which sounds amazing, being a feminist Western. Mm-hmm. So if people, I would encourage listeners to go and read The Secret of You and Me. But after that, is that the next book they should be picking up?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like the New York Times said in its thing, it's a, you know, genderqueer book. It has a pansexual couple. It has a character that is actually based on a historic figure called Charlie Parker Hurst, who dresses as a man for their entire life, becomes a really, you know, popular, well-known guy in the West, and nobody knew that he was assigned a woman at birth until he died, and they were preparing his body for burial, which is really amazing that he was able to do that for all those years. So one of the characters is based on that, but also it's just a fun story. You know, it's about I pitched it as Thelma and Louise meets the Magnificent Seven. And it's about this gang of female outlaws who are really just tired of men taking credit for their outlaw deeds and decide to do something about it. And it's very, I started writing it actually right after Trump got elected. I actually started writing it November 1st. And then Trump was, he was elected, I don't know, a week later or so. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of anger at the patriarchy in the book. And I actually toned that down a lot. It was a lot angrier before. But I think that it's a great book. And as I was writing in a lot of these, I was thinking about the characters and, you know, a lot of the things that they were fighting for and stuff. We still haven't necessarily achieved, and it was a little depressing writing about it, but, you know, I think you can learn so much about the present time when you read historical fiction, and I hope that people learn that and with Heresy. But yeah, it's one of my favorite books. I think it's probably my best work. It was a real challenge to write, and it's told, the structure of it is different, which made it a challenge to write. But yeah, I love that book, and I highly recommend it to everyone.
Yeah, well, great. I think I will pick it up myself. Obviously, as you said, you do genre hop. So having now written a lesbian romance, are you going to come back and do another one, like a romance of any stripe?
So what I'm working on right now is another lesbian romance, actually. So I am actually today finishing it and turning it in. That's my goal anyway.
Okay. Congratulations.
So, yes. So thank you. Now I've said it here on the podcast, I have to do it.
You do, yeah.
And then I need to finish the story and the Stillwater and the Mysteries, the Mystery Series. The third one would would be the end of that. And I want to go back and write a historical fiction, but just there's just not a story idea right now that is grabbing me. And I really like writing women's fiction, so we'll see how it goes. Hopefully these will go well and sell well, and they'll want to publish more. So we'll just have to see.
Yeah.
But these are probably the three genres I will jump between. You know, I don't know that there's any other genre that I'm really suited to write.
Okay. But you've got the taste for lesbian romance now.
I do, yes.
Yeah.
And I've been reading a lot of them too. So it's like, that's kind of where my mind's going.
Right. Okay, cool. So you're a full-time writer, I'm guessing?
I am. Yeah. Right, yeah. I was a stay-at-home mom, so I was able to write once my kids were both in school and stuff. And by the time I really started doing this, I guess, quote-unquote, professionally, when I was writing for contracts and stuff, they were old enough that they could take care of themselves. They're pretty independent, the boys, my two boys. And so finding time to write and managing and juggling and all that stuff has never been a huge issue, because when it would have been a juggle was when I was just learning to write. And so I could go days and stuff without writing and everything. And you know, the family and stuff came first. But then when it really became a job, I guess you could say, they were old enough that I was able to say, I need to write. And they were, okay, cool. You know, so I was really lucky in that particular regard. Right. And now my youngest, he's going off to college in August, and I'm going to have all kinds of time.
Yeah, you will. You went on what today? You're going to be super productive.
Well, that's the goal.
Yeah.
As I told you in our chat before, I tend to get really motivated and creative at like 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'm a night owl working from like 10 to 2 and sleeping till noon. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you can do that. You know, you can make your own schedule. So what is your writing process? Is there a typical day?
Oh, Claire, that's such a good question. And no, I wish I was more organized. I wish I was more disciplined. I really am not. I know I need to write, then I'll sit down, and you know, the world's on fire, and it's been on fire in my opinion since 2016, and it's hard to look away from that car crash. And so I've spent too much time dwelling and worrying about that and trying to do things to fix it. But so I usually try to sit down and write a couple hours in the morning. I discovered this process. It's these Pomodoro sprints. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's like a 25-minute sprint, and then you take a 5-minute break. And then a 25-minute sprint and a 5-minute break. And I would always do sprints that were longer, like almost an hour. But I find that these 25-minute ones are really productive for me, because you can do anything for 25. I mean, 25 minutes is like, oh, I can do that for 25 minutes. And then I look down after it's over, and I've written 400 words. It's like, okay, nice. You know, and so mm-hmm. That has really helped me over the last few months be more productive. But I would love nothing more than to have the discipline to say, okay, I'm going to sit down, write from 10 to noon, and then take a break, and then write from 1 to 3, and I'm going to do workouts in between there, and I'm going to be, you know, in shape and so creative, and that never happens.
No, if you find the magic button that makes that happen, let me know, because I'd love it too. Yeah, that would be great. I'm also a fan of the Pomodoro sprint, so I'm on the bus with that one.
Yeah, it's been great. I love it.
Yeah. So do you have a favorite thing about writing and a least favorite thing?
You know, I think my favorite and least favorite is the same thing. I love that I can do it on my own when I want. And nobody's really telling me they are kind of telling me what to do, but I love I can do it whenever I want, but I hate that I can do it whenever I want, because then you almost feel like you should always be writing. Like if I haven't met my word goal, if I haven't written, I'm like, ugh, it's kind of hanging over my head. So, you know, that's a good and bad thing, especially when you're not disciplined like I am. So.
And is there a best piece of writing advice you've ever been given?
I've been thinking about this question, and there's so many pieces of advice that or just the same old thing. I think instead of advice that I've been given, I think the best writing realization I had, and it's sounds so hokey because it's so obvious, is you got to learn to finish. You know, you have to learn how to finish that first book or any book, because if you don't finish, you're never going to get published. And so many people just kind of work on the same book, learn to finish and then move on to the next book, I guess is what I'm trying to say, because so many people just work on the same book over and over and over for years, and they never get anywhere, and they don't understand why. And it's because the only way you really learn how to be a good writer is to finish something and move on to something else. And then you'll learn something from that next book that you're writing, and you finish it and you move on to something else. So, but that's how I learned to write, was by just writing and continuing and being dogged and stuff like that. But I really didn't come into my own until I learned to finish. So it's really basic, but that's probably the best writing realization I've ever, ever had.
Cool. No, yeah, that's very good advice. The Secret of You and Me is out in August the 4th, I think you said. And you said that you've got this next lesbian romance. When is that due out?
You know, I haven't actually gotten a date for that, but I'm thinking probably next fall. Since I'm delivering it here in July. But no, I haven't gotten a specific date. Now, they may have a specific date, Greenhouse, but I'm not aware of it yet. But I'm going to say next fall sometime.
Okay. All right. We'll look out for that. But in the meantime, yes, The Secret of You and Me out on August 4th. So final question. If you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose and why?
This is such a great question. And I'm going to tell you the two writers that popped into my head first, and they are so different, and it would be such a weird writing love child, but I would say Jane Austen and Patricia Highsmith.
I think that'd be a great one.
You think so? Yeah. I don't know. I mean, a little witty, but kind of dark, and I don't know. It would be really strange.
I think the oddest matchups are quite often the best ones, and it's always best to choose the first two that come into your head, right?
There you go. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. So this has been fantastic, Melissa. Thank you so much for joining me. And finally, just let listeners know where they can find out more about you.
Right. So they can go to my website. It's melissalenhart.com. MelissaLenhart.com. They can find me on Twitter at Mel Lenhart and on Facebook at Melissa Lenhart Author. And then also on Instagram. Oh, gosh. I think it's Mel Lenhart Author. I'm not sure. It just might be Mel Lenhart. Search for Melissa Lenhart. You'll find me.
Yes. Brilliant. All right. Thank you so much for joining me, and go and have a well-deserved second cup of coffee.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's been brilliant. I really appreciate it. And also thank you for your kind words about Secret. Those are, wow. I'm still floating on air when you said it was your, maybe your best book of the year so far. So I hope I keep that title, but there's so many brilliant lesbian romances out there. I wouldn't be surprised if I don't. But thank you so much for all of this. I appreciate it.
That's the end of this Lesbian Book Club. So this is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. If you'd like to find out any more about me or my books, just head on over to my website at www.clairelydon.co.uk. And while you're there, you can sign up for a free lesbian romance by filling in your email in the box at the top of the page. My books are also available anywhere books are published or streamed. Amazon, Kobo, Barnes & Noble, Apple, Google, Bella Books, Ilva Publishing, and direct from me on my website. Again, that's www.clairelydon.co.uk. And there's always a bargain to be had. Thank you so much to The Lesbian Lounge for hosting and producing this podcast. It's much appreciated. And join me next month when I'll be having some more hot book club action. See you then.